Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
May I have your attention, please? Now, taking the airwaves on 97.3 The Fan, San Diego's own. Gwynn and Chris.
Featuring Tony Gwynn Jr.
Give me some meat.
And Chris Ello.
Well, then I'm no genius. I shouldn't be called a genius for helping you put on 35 pounds.
Gwynn and Chris starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
504 out here in San Diego. Tony Gwynn Jr., AJ Casaball. Game 7, about 4 minutes away, and it should be a great one. But before we go down the Game 7 road, I think we need to address something that happened in the realm of college sports. The NCAA yesterday made a decision that they will start exploring pay-for-play. I had it right the first time. And, you know, yesterday talking about it, I know just about what I've read, but our next guest, Jay Billis, ESPN college basketball analyst, does one of the best jobs of articulating how this is going to work or how it could work. Jay, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are fantastic. First and foremost, what are your thoughts on the NCAA making the decision they made yesterday?
Well, in one measure, you say, okay, well, it's a first step and maybe some incremental progress, and usually progress is incremental, but I'm a little more sanguine and perhaps you could call it cynical, and rightfully so, about it. I don't believe that the NCAA is really attempting to do anything that's going to positively impact the athlete here or provide the athlete with the same economic rights as everyone else. I think what they're trying to do, they feel forced into this by the state of California with a recent law passed, SB 206, and then the other states that are moving to do, if not the same thing, something similar. And then in Congress, where Representative Mark Walker and a colleague have a bill in the House of Representatives to allow college athletes their name, image, and likeness rights. So really what I believe the NCAA is doing here, and I think they said as much, is we're going to look at providing the opportunity for name, image, and likeness rights as long as the players don't ever get a chance to monetize it because it doesn't fit in with it within this made-up collegiate model we talk about. And I don't think they're really trying to do anything at all. I think they're trying to stall legislation and forestall having to do anything on this. And they're even asking, they even asked Congress, hey, would you mind pulling that bill now that we're doing this? And Congress said, no, the two representatives said, no, we're not pulling it. So they're going to continue to get pressure, but, I wouldn't be surprised to see the NCAA sue the state of California and then just try to delay this and then put something really minimal in place to say, hey, look what we did. But the players don't really have any real rights here. It's just they've made, like, they stepped forward an inch, and that's it.
So what does this mean for what the next step is? It seems to me like there's not a whole lot that's going to change, and that it's still a fight for players to be able to profit off their image and likeness, and not a whole lot changes with this ruling because it is going to most likely be kicked down the road. What do you see happening, I guess, next from the side of the student athletes trying to be able to profit? What's the next step for them to be able to achieve that goal?
It'll be more legislation, more saber rattling and laws being passed, more legal action. So we'll be back in the courts. and then you'll see more action in the courts on behalf of the players. So we had in recent years the O'Bannon case and then the Jenkins case. And the O'Bannon case, actually, even though the NCAA was found to have violated federal antitrust law with regard to name, image, and likeness, the remedies really were in the NCAA's favor. You know, that's where the cost of attendance came from, and essentially. And so, you know, that ruling was actually pretty good for the NCAA. I think what they're doing now is actually going to open that case up for challenge. And basically say, hey, wait a minute. You know, we had the Ninth Circuit said tethered to education. Well, now you're doing something that doesn't have anything to do with education. So why should it be limited in the way you're trying to limit it? I think Jeffrey Kessler and other lawyers are going to be able to challenge the Ninth Circuit ruling in O'Bannon and Jenkins, and we could see some movement there. But it's going to take some time now. And that's exactly what the NCAA wanted. They wanted this to be stalled, so they don't have to do anything in the short run. And they're gonna run, you know, they're gonna run out the try to run out the clock and stall this and see if they can win a case here, win a case there, and see if they can hang on to their power, and hang on to their money, and then keep the athletes the only class. Really the only class in our society, but certainly the only class in college sports, including any other non-athlete student that isn't allowed full economic rights. It's really kind of, you know, it's kind of laughable the way they treat athletes and the things that they say. And last thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up, is that
you're fine.
You know, one thing you know for sure in this, a month ago, give or take, when California passed its law, the NCAA said that this is antithetical to what college sports is about, and it is going to ruin college sports, you know, all this stuff, and everything teeters on the athlete and all this business that women are going to be hurt, women's sports are going to be cut, the players are going to become professional, they're going to become employees, we can't hold championships anymore, and then they've basically kind of done an about face flip flop, and you're going, okay, so that's really the principle. You guys have a lot of principles, huh, that you're going to fight for, and they just turned around. Like, this is all phony in my judgment. I don't think there's anything about this that is on the up and up, honestly.
Yeah, Jay, now that you put it like that, I actually kind of see it a little bit the way you've explained it, which is why we had you on. You do such an incredible job of articulating that. Let's talk a little bit about the actual game of basketball. And out here in San Diego, we're expecting a pretty solid team. They got a few transfers that will be stepping in to the fold that create a lot of expectation. What do you think of the San Diego State basketball team this year, possibly?
They'll be good. You know, they lost a lot, and especially when you lose older players. Like, they'll be young, but even when they're older, they'll be inexperienced in the San Diego State way. And so Brian Dutcher's a really good coach. He's got a great staff. They're going to do just fine. But it's going to be a difficult transition to go from having some older players that have been in the system to having a lot of younger guys and then new guys that have transferred in. But they'll figure it out. And one thing you know about San Diego State, especially under Steve Fisher and now Brian, is they're going to guard you and they're going to play really hard. And if you defend and play hard, especially in that league, you're going to have a chance. And I won't be surprised to see, you know, San Diego State back in the NCAA tournament again.
We got Game 7 of the World Series underway over here. And for me, the end of baseball season, one of the things it means is it's the start of college hoop season. So I just like to ask you, Jay, to kind of set the scene. I know last year the main storylines that we kind of all knew going in would captivate the sport were what Zion was going to do, how Virginia was going to bounce back from their early exit. It was kind of a thrilling finish to the season in that regard. What do you see as the emerging early season storylines in the 2019-20 college basketball season in a general sense?
Well, I think there'll be a lot of the usual suspects that'll be really good again, whether it's Michigan State will start the year number one because they've got so many players coming back from last year's Final Four team, which was Tom Izzo's eighth, led by Cassius Winston, who has a chance to hit Bobby Hurley's all-time assist record this year and break that. It's an outside chance, but it's a chance. In Kansas, they'll be powerful and big and long and athletic and deep again. after what you know most schools would take Kansas's season last year and say what a great year, but Kansas for them it was an off year because they didn't win the Big 12 for the 15th straight year. But they're going to be top five all year long as they stay healthy. Kentucky, there are two teams that were not quite as good last year, still good, still NCAA tournament, still good. Florida and Louisville are going to be excellent. Mm. Duke may take a little bit of a step back because they'll be young again, but not with the same kind of power that they had with R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, and certainly not the star power with R.J. and Zion. But they'll still be good and good defensively. But I think, honestly, it's going to be a year kind of like 2010 or 2011 where I think it's okay to go into the season going, you know what, I'm not sure about some of these teams. I don't know. And if you'll remember, in 2011, that was the year of Kemba Walker. And nobody before the season said Kemba Walker is going to take over and be the best player. Nobody said that. We thought he'd be good, but I didn't think he'd be the best player. And then he took UConn to the national championship. Nobody thought Trae Young 3 years ago was going to be, or 2 years ago, whatever it is, was going to be the best player in the country. And he was, or at least right there to be the best player. So, you know, there's a lot that we're going to enjoy seeing emerge, and we see it in football all the time. You know, we didn't know that Kyler Murray was going to be the best player, number one pick last year. We didn't know Baker Mayfield would be the best player the year before. Or the Heisman winner, at least. So I think basketball is setting up that way. We knew Zion was going to wow us last year.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of I don't know going into the year, and I think that's kind of exciting. And I'm kind of looking forward to being surprised this year.
No doubt about it. There's no Golden State Warriors this year in college basketball, which I think these set up to be some of the best seasons that we get to witness. Jay, we certainly appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on the show today.
Always my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Jay Billis, ESPN college basketball analyst. We got to step away, take a break. When we come back, LeVar Ball has been caught in the crosshairs of all the smoke. Remember, we had Steven Jackson on last week. Him and Matt Barnes had some quite spicy language for old LeVar. We'll get into it next. This is Gwen and Chris, 97.3, The Fan. Bottom of one out in Houston, 0-0, two outs. Runner on first for the Astros, and just by the looks of it, Max Scherzer seems all right.
Yeah, 97 on the fastball with movement.
I think that's pretty good.
This, I mean, we're just in the first inning, but this game is going to be so much fun to watch. Just assuming nobody, like, takes the lead and just runs with it. I expect this to be a really good game. There were some hard-hit balls off of Greinke in the first, but all hit at somebody. And it looks like Scherzer's going to get through his first inning unscathed. Gave up the one walk to was that Spring? No, who was that he walked right there?
Brantley.
And got Bregman to pop out in his first at bat. So one inning's in the book, eight to go. We're waiting on some sound right now for my lovely producer, Matt Scraby, who did such a good job pulling the sound earlier, but I think he forgot to save it. So now he's kind of scrambling, but how do you think this game is going to – you think this is going
to – pitching-wise, it's the fascinating part for me because you've got these two guys. Scherzer's dealing with what he's dealing with. Do you just turn him loose?
You got to. I think so.
Eight.
And two, it looks like they're starting to line you up or that you can't command a baseball. He's got to keep going. I mean, you probably –
Worry about the consequences later.
Worry about it later. I mean, at this point, he's throwing 97, so I'm pretty sure he can't feel that back right now.
So if say you get six or seven from him – the bullpen is what it is. It's not great. They have a couple guys who are
solid. I got two guys,
solid.
Let's be honest.
Yeah,
yes.
They have two guys. Then maybe they have Corbin, and maybe they even have Strasburg, which would be...
They got Sanchez.
You know what? Someone made the comparison. Strasburg threw 104 pitches in game six. So did Randy Johnson in 2001 when he came in and finished the game for the Diamondbacks.
That would be a boss move right there.
Come back, full Randy Johnson.
Right back the next day and throw an inning? Throw a batter? I don't know what the case would be.
Bring him in for the ninth. 3-2 game?
Listen, if it goes the way Dave Martinez wants it to, they'll probably be able to get deep enough to give it back to Hudson or Doolittle. But you do have Corbin available, who got up yesterday. You got Sanchez available. I'm almost 100% positive. If they need Strasburg for a hitter, he'll give it to him. All guys are on deck in Game 7.
Yeah, I think that's what I've noticed from covering teams and watching. Like, during the season, it's different than during the postseason. Guys want to do what they think is best for them during the season to sustain themselves.
Everybody begins to sacrifice.
In the playoffs,
it's a lot easier to get guys to sacrifice. And listen, I think one of the things that I do enjoy about analytics in today's game is it's forced teams to look at the regular season a lot different over the course of 162. And I think that's good for the longevity of players, honestly.
It makes the quality of these games better because the guys haven't been running to the ground during the regular season.
It definitely does. Although, as a broadcaster that has to watch a lot of these games, I do wish we could find a way to make that brand at least – you know what it is? It's more so, I think, getting more teams to not be afraid to be in the middle of the pack. And I know it sets you back sometimes, but listen, there are jewels in the draft anywhere from first round – to third round, right?
Yeah.
And you catch a lot of those guys mid-round. You know, I mean, like to teens in a lot of cases. So I would like to see more teams being competitive because it just seems like teams get to spring training and they know they don't have a shot to win a division and they just completely go the other way.
Yeah, and the idea that you just get a wild card and get in. I know the Nationals have done it, but the Nationals are really freaking good.
Yeah.
They are really good. And they've been one of the best teams in baseball since May, whatever. This is not a they got in and then it's a crapshoot from there. It's they got in and they're riding three
they
of the best pitchers in baseball.
And they got in and they have the starting rotation that really shouldn't be in a wild card spot. They should be in a division spot, but they play in a tough division, right? They got the Braves in that division. They got Philly in that division.
Yeah, and so I'll say if you're trying to make it fairer, if you're trying to make baseball like the middle class better and more competitive – my answer is I'm just not a fan of rewarding the bad teams with the first pick.
If that's part of the problem is that everybody's shooting. And listen, let's be honest, the Astros started this bad boy, right? They're the first ones that lost four straight years of 100 losses. They got the picks. All of those picks actually didn't end up working for them. But
that's not the reason the Astros are the Astros.
That's
now.
Not the reason.
It's
but,
one of the reasons, but it's not maybe even a top three.
But teams
reason.
Look at that and they try to copycat what they're doing.
And if eight teams are doing it, it's just not going to be as successful because you're not going to get that top pick every year. And
exactly.
So it's so diluted now where it just doesn't work.
And not only that,
in my opinion,
it hurts the common fan that wants to watch regular season that watches regular season games and wants to see a better brand of baseball too. It's almost like now. So for some of the teams, they're using it as like a build-up session. They try to get their players brought up, and they use them. All right, we ready now?
I have no idea where it went. You guys saw me doing it earlier.
And is it back now?
It's back.
Okay. So I told you guys before we left, and Juan Soto just continues to hit balls really, really hard. He's on deck, on base with a leadoff single
MVP.
In the second.
World Series MVP Juan Soto?
He's going to push. He's going to push.
I wonder if he'd be the youngest.
That's a good question. What was Chipper? Yeah, he might be. Check that out, Scrape. All right, I teased before we went to break about LeVar being in the crosshairs of Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, who have their new podcast that's on Showtime. All the Smoke is what it's called. And here's what they had to say about LeVar.
Me touching on Zoe, the best thing that could have happened to him, whether it was a trade or not, was getting out of L.A.
Right.
And we don't know the insides, but from the outside looking in, it really looks like there's a conflict of, you know, Zoe wanting to be his own man and LeVar trying to hold on like you're going to do this family brand thing.
Your dad cannot be speaking against your organization in the media, bro.
Oh, no, come on, man. Talking bad about the players, everything.
You went from the father that everybody loves to the father everybody hates.
Like, shut the
Yeah, like,
sit
come on,
back.
Bro, stop,
it's
bro. Your son is talented. He got a great opportunity to play at home in L.A. for the Lakers, and you want to overshadow it by the things that you want to say. Yeah,
right.
that's terrible, dog. That's terrible.
And I think they got one more coming down the pipeline. Who could possibly be the number one pick?
Listen, I think we need to come together and hire a security team to keep LeVar away from the youngest son because the youngest son is the one.
He got game.
Okay? He got game. He got everything, all the talent. He out there overseas working, doing his thing. We cannot let LeVar mess up this kid's career. This kid got it.
I just thought that was hilarious because it's probably something we all thought at some point.
listening to LeVar. But these two guys certainly aren't afraid to say it. And they aired him out pretty good. What's the youngest one? Is it LaMelo?
Yes, I believe it
LaMelo's the youngest one. He has a chance to be a first-round pick. And it's going to be interesting to see because LeVar, as he came into – or not LeVar. I don't want me to say that. Lonzo, as he came into the league, certainly seemed like he kind of wanted to be his own man, watching him in L.A. the last 2 years. But it just could never get from underneath – A, his dad sabotaging his time here. I truly believe that. When you start talking about the GM that your son works for, the teammates that your son share a locker room with, it's never a good thing, AJ.
Yeah, I can't for the life of me understand why we pay so much attention to what LeVar Ball says.
Like, me too.
He's not the one that's going out and playing the games and whose opinion we should care about. And he's just been constantly given a platform since Lonzo Ball's first day in college. And for some reason, it's only grown. And I don't watch the game for the dad of the point guard.
Have we ever watched the game for the point guard. Have we ever watched the game for the people playing parents?
No, and I don't know. So we keep giving him this platform, whereas it probably hurts Lonzo more than anyone else,
100%.
And that's what those guys were saying. But it also probably hurts our viewing experience because he's not doing anything. We're not talking about the actual games themselves and what might make the Lakers better, what might make the Pelicans better. I can't believe we're still talking about LeVar Ball.
We are. The only reason why I had it on the show today is because I thought it was hilarious that Matt Barnes told him to shut the you know what up. And he said it so casually. So
I appreciate that candidly.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. I'll be tuning in a lot more to
like,
all the smoke.
Shut the up.
I believe I've found that Brett Saberhagen is the youngest MVP of the World Series of all time at the age of 21.
Are you sure? You had
21. So it would be Soto unless it Soto's 21 and like 4 days.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And Brett Saberhagen, his
how old was Vida Blue? Because that was your first answer.
No, that was youngest MVP for the regular season.
Aye. All right.
So let's see.
April 11th, 1964 is when Saberhagen was born. So Juan Soto will definitely be
younger.
And Fernando Tatis will never get that chance because he turns 21 this offseason.
That's a bummer.
Well, maybe he will actually.
That's true.
If Juan Soto doesn't win it,
there you go.
He's got a year to be World Series MVP.
AJ, you got your work cut out for you. All right, here we go. We got to step away, take a break. When we come back, the countdown. And we got a special countdown for you today since AJ Cassavell is here with us. Top five Padres off-season to-do list. I think it's fitting. The first part is taken care of. Now we're on to probably the much more difficult part for AJ Preller. We'll talk about it when we come back. Gwen and Chris, 97.3, The Fan. 5:36. Gwen and Chris show is brought to you by Sonic Drive-Ins here in San Diego. Amazing burgers and drinks with 8 locations around town. So Google Sonic San Diego and find the nearest location. Pickles? Pickles are usually on good chicken sandwiches. Don't like them.
By the way, I'm a little angry at Popeyes.
Why?
Because it's a marketing ploy with their chicken sandwich.
Dude, is it just me or is Scraby always angry about something?
Lately, I've been angry.
He's been up in his feels about everything lately.
Up in my feels.
I like that. You're in your feelings, man. That's what that means.
They are using the chicken sandwich, and they ran out of the chicken sandwich on purpose so that they can bring it back at a later date.
Oh, is that what they did?
Yeah, they ran out of buns.
No, they didn't. They ran out of chicken.
And buns.
It's business. It's savvy.
It's basic economics. Supply.
I waited for a half hour in line for that stupid chicken sandwich.
It's definitely not stupid. That's why you waited a half an hour.
I didn't get one.
Yeah, get there earlier. Sometimes you gotta get a chicken sandwich for breakfast.
You're just lucky that you went that random one day and got it.
I so got lucky after a long Padre game. I was like, you know what, AJ? I don't know if you heard the story.
I have not.
I can't remember. It might have been Tampa. It was one of those like late Thursday games or early Thursday games. I'm coming over here after a game, after doing the actual broadcast on radio. I was like, I'm hungry. I got to stop and get some. I just stopped at Popeyes to get like some chicken fingers. That's what I stopped in there. And I was like, the line was a little long. I was like, I'm going to go inside, make this a little faster. And I look on the menu. I'm like, oh, what? Word? They got a new chicken sandwich? I'm going to try that. And I'm thinking the whole time that it's going to be like one of those chicken sandwiches where they put 3 chicken strips on there. And that's your, no, it was like a juicy pat. Oh,
We did
that. It's just now gone. That's the.
It's gone, but it's they're bringing it back.
It's coming back.
Yeah, and they're using it as a marketing ploy. Last Friday, our countdown was top five chicken sandwiches. This chicken sandwich was so good that Tony put it at number one on his list.
It's not even a question. Wow. It really isn't.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
That's crazy. And this comes from somebody who was obsessed with Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Popeye's marketing thing, too.
That's number two.
Yeah, that would have been number one for
They're starting their chicken sandwich on Sunday this coming weekend is when it's coming back, on the 2nd of November.
Who? Popeye's?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
To marketing against Chick-fil-A, who's closed on Sundays.
You can't get your chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A on Sunday.
Boycott.
Oh, God. Here we go. All right.
Scherzer's in some trouble.
He is. By the way, Gurriel. Ah.
And they're bunting.
Oh, the American League team can't do the fundamentals. Pops up the bunt. I like when that happens.
I mean, it makes for a more interesting game if you're going to give away outs and keep the Nationals in it early when you got them on the ropes.
Yeah, he's not going to execute. See, I like the way AJ preferences, right? It's giving away outs.
That's
there.
What it is.
But really, if he'd have done his job, you're giving away an out in order to move base runners closer to home plate.
Yeah, but you're still giving away. You're decreasing your expected runs for the inning by doing that there. There's a time. I don't believe never bunt. I just believe bunt less and bunt in the right spots.
Like the first
and that's
time
not
they
the right spot.
When's the right spot?
The right spot is maybe the ninth inning when you only need one run, you got a guy on second or whatever. Your expected runs for that, and you have a good bunter at the plate. That's the first thing. You need a guy who can execute, and I don't know that Robinson Chirinos is that guy. And have a guy that you know can execute, your chances of scoring one run go up, but your chances of scoring multiple runs go down a little bit. In this spot, in the second inning of Game 7 of the World Series, you have a chance to blow the whole thing open.
How likely is that, though?
Not unlikely.
You're
giving yourself one-third less of a chance to really blow the inning open.
Who cares if you give up that one out for two runs? Or a run in a World Series at this point?
Also, Scherzer's a strikeout guy, too. So the chances of the next guy making contact, putting the ball in play, getting the guys home is lower than with other guys. I just think that's not this early. It's just not the spot for me.
I have to root for the Astros to actually score now because I don't want you to be right on this, even though I'm rooting for the Nationals.
I'm not a don't bunt ever crowd, but I'm a
sounds like it.
But I'm a don't people. They should be bunting a whole lot less, and they definitely shouldn't be bunting right there.
All right, let's get into this countdown.
It's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is the countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, with the baseball season definitely ending tonight, AJ and I thought, you know, why not start getting into the Padres offseason? And with the, I think there's some quite a few moves that need to happen. Don't know exactly what those are, but I have my ideas. So does AJ. We're going to give you our top five Padres offseason to-do list. AJ, you go first, but after.
Number five.
That.
All right, number five I'll say is find a way to trade Will Myers and maybe take some of that contract burden out of there so you give yourself flexibility to maneuver in other areas. Will Myers is still owed $68.5 million over the next three seasons. I think he could be a useful player, but when you have other holes to fill on your roster, specifically a left-handed bat and a starting pitcher, that money could be better allocated elsewhere. If you find a taker for him, maybe you throw in a prospect and you free up that space. That's a to-do list thing for me.
Ooh, that's a tough one. How much does he do?
$68.5 million. And I believe if he gets traded, there's another $1 million assignment bonus.
Oh, that is a kick in the gut right there. Number five for me would be the same thing. Now, I didn't know that Will was due that. I mean, I guess I did know that. The only issue and why it's five on my list is because it's going to be tough. Because if teams are going to take on that contract, they're going to want the Padres more than likely to pay for it, pay for some portion of
it. Sure, and maybe the Padres get someone back, too, like someone that fills a hole. Because I don't think Will Myers fills they hit lefties pretty well, and they have right-handed bats. And so right. I don't know that he's a movable piece. Maybe you get a depth starting pitcher out of it who's also owed a little bit of money, and you've given yourself
that's
some
a good
leeway.
Point, because that's a spot you'll hear later on my list that the Padres are going to have to address
okay.
as well.
Number four.
Is this me, number four? All right, number four, I say, and it's related to Will Myers, I'll say it's find a left-handed hitting outfielder. A guy who can balance the outfield, because the Padres last season in Will Myers, Manuel Margot, and Hunter Renfroe and Framil Reyes for the first half of the season, they torched lefties and they couldn't hit righties, and that's the biggest problem with this offense is the imbalance and their inability to hit all kinds of pitching. So if you find a left-handed hitting outfielder, maybe you platoon Franchi Cordero, Manuel Margot in center field, maybe you give Josh Naylor some playing time, and you have that other guy, whether it's Corey Dickerson or Nick Markakis or someone via trade, all of a sudden, the offense is more balanced. You can play the guys when they should be playing. I think Hunter Renfro's numbers get better because he's not playing necessarily every single day. He's playing against guys he should be playing against. I think finding an outfielder who can hit left-handed is the Padres' number four priority.
There's going to be a bigger list than I think we all assume right now. There'll be some guys non-tendered. I expect there will be some decent outfielders on that non-tendered list. So that could be a good spot. Number four on my list is what are they going to do at second base? I think when you look at the infield, it's the strongest part of their team.
Yeah.
First base, third base, shortstop, all pretty solidified. That second base position is a question mark. How do you address it? Do you make a trade? Do you go free agency? I don't even know who's available at the second base position. I'm not 100% off of Luis Urias. I thought he showed some improvement that last month.
Pretty good in September.
Seems like he started to find his feet, find his groove a little bit. But again, when you are competing for a division or a playoff team, those spots have to be more productive.
Mm-hmm.
That spot in particular is going to have to be more productive. So I got ideas. That you can put at set. You can go out and get a guy like D. Gordon. Make a trade for him. He can solve a couple different issues for you. Better defensively.
Yeah,
left-handed bat. Can run. And I think he'd be a good fit in this clubhouse.
I don't have second base on my list. And I maybe it's because I'm a little higher on Luis Urias than most. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's, and fans won't like to hear this, that he is a pretty somewhat valuable trade piece that you, if you put him in a package for a starting pitcher, given what he was and the fact that he's only 22 and the fact that he finished season strong and there's still some upside there, you could get something for him. So second base could be a area of need. Right now, it's not in my top five. The Padres absolutely need to look at that honestly and assess what they have at second base, though.
Yeah, I think I disagree a little bit. I think his value has been hurt.
Sure, it's not what it was.
He's gone up, gone down, gone up, gone down, gone up, and hasn't really made this progression that you usually see from guys who've had experience. But again, I remind you, I think he's got like 300-something at-bats, 200-something at-bats. It's not enough to really critique him one way or the other yet.
And the fact that he did what he did in September when he finally got the regular playing time
means
something.
Yes, I agree.
It sets him up nicely for at least some confidence going into the offseason.
Number three,
and three and two for me are almost in the same boat, but I'm going to split them up, and I'm going to say number three is finding a depth starting pitcher. Finding not the frontline guy, but the Padres too many times this year had to go to a bullpen game when they needed a starting pitcher, or they called up a prospect maybe a little early, a Bolaños or Pedro Avila.
Yeah.
They need to go out and get a guy with some pedigree, with some experience, who can help lead the rotation, maybe in the Cole Hamels, Dallas Keuchel kind of mode. And I know those guys aren't going to come cheap, but you can get them on a shorter contract and allow them to pitch while you wait for some of these prospects to come up, and you're not pushing anyone ahead of schedule. I think the Padres rotation is two guys away from being a really, really solid group of young pitchers, because Chris Paddock's going to take a step forward, I think. Mackenzie Gore is the real deal. Luis Patino could arrive. Like, there's pieces in place. The depth, to me, is something that gets overlooked, because it takes more than five guys 100%. To build a playoff roster.
100%. And we've seen that with a few teams this year, you know, where you need that depth.
The Dodgers do it every year.
You need that depth just to get through 162, because nobody has five horses. You might be a Nationals, you got three, but nobody has more than that. So you're going to need more than just the five starters to get through the season. I also agree there. Number three for me is the catching position. And it's one of the more underrated positions on the field, because we don't think of them as an offensive position.
Mm-hmm.
But in today's game, you kind of need a catcher that can produce a little bit of offense. Mainly, though, you need to be able to get what they get right now from Austin Hedges defensively. You may not be able to get it on that level, because Austin is one of the best defenders we have in baseball, in my opinion. But offensively, there's got to be a boost in production. And at this point, I don't know that you're going to get that from either of the guys that they have. Now, I think Mejia still has a lot of potential to be good. And I think he showed a lot, actually, in doing a good job of starting to control the strike zone in 2019. I thought he got a lot better at that. Although, if I'm being honest, I didn't see that same progression behind the.
I think that's fair, and I also think it's the tough thing for the Padres is judging. If you play Mejia, you lose the defense. If you play Hedges, you lose the offense.
Right.
And so, what do you do with Mejia? I think part of the reason he made strides was because the Padres kind of said to him, just go out and be what you are. We're okay with you being a free swinger. Don't be overthinking it in the box. And he had a better year at the plate. I don't know what the answer is at catcher. Catcher to me is the most unpredictable one, because it could be they could roll with these two. I mean,
and it could work.
Yeah. They could trade Hedges and rely on some of their young guys in the organization. That could work. Or they could just go blow it up and go out and try and sign something.
I think a lot of that depends on at least whether they go back to both of them again, depends on what they do with the rest of the team. You know, if you're strong enough elsewhere, you can have a platoon there where it's defense, offense. You can do that. But you have to be strong at the other positions. There's just no doubt about
it. Which they're not right now.
No,
and so
not.
So it's more glaring when Austin Hedges struggles, because the rest of the lineup isn't picking up the slack.
Exactly.
Number two
for me, it's kind of the same as my number three, which was the depth starter. Now I say the ace starter is number two, or the frontline guy. And I don't know where you get that guy. I don't know if they're going to be in on Steven Strasburg or Gerrit Cole. I don't know if Noah Syndergaard is still a trade option. The Mets have said he's not, but that's what I would say if I had an ace who was potentially there to be traded. I wouldn't advertise to teams that, we're looking to trade him. So
right.
I think the Padres need a frontline guy of that ilk, and I don't know. To me, it seems more likely they go out and get it via trade. They have the prospects to go out and do that. And at some point, the focus needs to shift from having the best farm system to using that farm system to win. And that's not always these guys coming up.
At times,
some of the time, it's trading the guys who are the right guys to be traded. Look what the Astros have done. The Astros have acquired some starting pitchers by trading the right prospects, guys who didn't go on to become stars elsewhere. The Padres need to look in their farm system, see who those guys are, whether it's Morejon or Baez, and who might not make a huge impact down the road, and use them to get that guy at the front of the rotation.
I think that complicates it. Like, you don't as long as you get what you're looking for from whoever you're getting, if that guy becomes a star, so be it.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, as long as what you're getting fits for your ball club at that time, that's really what matters. And I personally kind of feel the same way. I've always felt that way. Ever since I started really paying attention to A.J. Preller and the moves he made, there hasn't been one part of me that didn't think he's doing this so he has something in the cupboards if he needs to be able to make a move. Because if we're being honest, all of these terrific prospects ain't going to get a chance to get to the big leagues with the Padres and be superstars. It just doesn't work.
Some of them will, some of them
won't. Some of them won't. It won't work that way overall. So I think that's what he's setting up to do this offseason. My number two, however, is that left-handed power bat in the outfield. I think it's a necessity for this ball club. They have to find another left-handed bat besides Eric Hosmer that is going to generate runs. Via whatever, home run, high, whatever the case may be, high OPS. You need more of that in this lineup. And a left-handed bat in particular is what they need in the outfield. And it was blaring during the season. It was a glaring signal during the 162 games that the Padres played.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, you'll see with my number one, that's kind of where I'm going.
Okay.
Number one.
All right, my number four was a left-handed hitting outfielder. But I think I'm going to set that aside and say the number one priority for the Padres on their to-do list this offseason is just bats, just hitters. And that does not mean left-handed bats necessarily.
Right.
I've talked to a lot of people, and I've kind of framed my questions with what are you going to do to get better against right-handed pitching? Are you going to go get left-handers? And the response is, no, we're going to go get good hitters who can bring this offense from where it is now, which is at seven spots on the diamond below average, to a playoff caliber team. And so I don't know, there's guys out there who are right-handed bats who can torch lefties. I don't know whether the answer is at second base or whether you can find a catcher who's significantly better than the league average offensively. The easiest place to do it is always in the outfield, and those guys are going to become available. But that's where the Padres need to look. The number one thing, and more important than pitching, because I think pitching long-term is more stable than what the offense is, because the guys aren't quite on the way offensively like they are in the rotation. You need to solidify this offense. You need to make it better than it was. It was not good last season. It has some pieces. It's not complete, and you need to go out there and find the guys, whether it's second base, catcher, center field, right field, wherever you fill in around the edges, that's where you go.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with the new rule change. Pitchers have to stay in there for three batters.
Yeah.
You could get an advantage more now, so with lefty-righty-lefty or righty-lefty-righty, having that kind of counter.
That might help Eric Hosmer.
I think it will. My number one is a frontline starter. I think this is the biggest need, because I've seen teams in this stadium have not a very good offense, but pitch it and defend it and find themselves in the thick of everything. And I think if there is no quick fix to the offensive side, this is the way to go as the number one priority. You get a guy, assuming Garrett Richards can stay healthy, you slide him into the two spot, and whoever that front line guy is in one, Paddock slides to three. You're looking at a rotation that can compete, if not, you know, in certain spots, really have the advantage. In certain cases, Chris Paddock as a number three in the league, I think, suits him very well. He gets the kind of work
where he is now in his career. That'd be
perfect for him. And he's going to be one of the frontline guys when it's all said and done. But right now, it's a little early. So I'm going to say frontline starter. And it may be the guy who pitched yesterday. Who knows?
That'd be fun.
That would be awesome.
Someone asked me in one of my mailbags recently how he would look in brown, and I just went back and looked at the 2016 All-Star game and found a picture of him.
Yeah,
that's how
you
he,
can
that's
do
how
that.
He looks. But,
you can do that. He looks good in darker colors. He wore all black down the street over here. So, you know, we're talking about Steven Strasburg, in case you guys didn't know. So. All right. 6 o'clock hour rolls through. We got a random debate coming your way. Scraby is just infatuated with this whole breakfast burrito thing. We'll explain when we come back. This is Gwen and Chris, 97.3, The Fan.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.